Okay, so this is Hilo Hawaii on December 22nd, 2008. Is there something I could put this? So it's nice to be back again. Thank you very much for having me. Nice to see you too, and all your family. And we've been working on some curriculum stuff, which I didn't bring with me tonight, but I'm hoping maybe sometime we can arrange that I could
have a
meeting. Show everybody. Well, we could do it for, actually what I could do is two of the children's books that I've done, I've made into presentation, adult preaching presentations. So we could do that, and then I could show you some of the stuff and get some of your feedback as to what you like and how you'd like me to develop it and what are the things you'd like me to do. So if you want to schedule that for some Sunday, if you like. And if you don't like, then you stay home that day, right?
Thank you.
Advaramam Sabhar Bhattacharya Asatara Savasri Shimada Sarangri Sesa Bhaktivinata Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jaya Natapati Vaishnava Ki Jaya Acharya Sri Haridas Thakur Ki Jaya Prem Sri Gaur Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Ki Jaya Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Gita Govardhana Ki Jaya Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jaya Turadhamma Ki Jaya Amudu Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jaya Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jaya Gangamay Jamuna Devi Ki Jaya Bhakti Devi Ki Jaya Tulsi Maharani Ki Jaya Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jaya Aur Premanand All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Krishna Prasthaya Vipalaya Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Sanamani. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachani Vasesa Sindhami Paskatal Desatarani Vande Ham Sri Guru Sri Yita Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Chan Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvaditam Parijana Sahitaya Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Vanta Sri Vishakam Vitam Chan. So, tonight I thought, instead of the standard class, I would tell a story. Is that all right? Everybody likes stories? All right. And this is a story about Krishna. That's something you expect to hear in a Krishna center, you know. I mean, generally we tell, like, Shiva and Durga stories or Barack Obama stories or something, you know. But we thought we'd have a little change and talk about Krishna. So, to tell you this story, I've looked at several sources. I've looked at Prabhupada's Krishna book and also the commentaries on this section of the 10th canto from Shirashami, Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, and Jiva Goswami. So, we are now all going to journey. And why did I pick this particular story? Because it just happened, I read through Krishna book again and again. It just happens to be where I am right now in the Krishna book. And I also just thought it was a really cool story. And I thought especially the kids would like it. Because it has a lot to do with monsters. Someday, I hope one of you will make a movie of this or something. At least as far out as anything anybody else is doing. So we're going to travel now to Dwarka, which is a beautiful, beautiful city. Where is Dwarka located?
India.
In the ocean, right. It's an island on the ocean. And Krishna went there. He moved all his family from Mathura when he was fighting with? Jarasandha. Right. Okay. So now, while Krishna's at Dwarka, Krishna's expansion brother, Balaram. Actually, Krishna and Balaram, they're the same person, but different mood, and Balaram is in the mood of a servant, Ekaleshwar Krishna, only Krishna. Although Balaram and Krishna are the same person, still Balaram has that mood. And Balaram decided, I really miss everybody in Vrindavan. And I think I want to go see everyone in Vrindavan. So Balaramaji went to Vrindavan, and he stayed there for a couple months. And while he was there, everyone was almost as happy as when Krishna and Balaram were there. Of course, he was dancing with his gopis, and that's when he killed...
Dandakasura.
No.
Sorry.
Dvidvida. Yes, he did kill Dandakasura, but that was earlier. That's okay, no problem. They're all eternal, so it's all right. Chronology is not so important. And that's also when he was... also, what did he do when he was there that trip? Yes, well, he does that regularly, but he drank Varuni. Yeah, and what happened when he was drinking Varuni? He was dancing with the gopis, and he?
Chastised
the Yamuna, right. Alati biti malita Yamuna. Right, so he dragged over the Yamuna. So, Balaramaji's there in Vrindavan, dancing the night away and drinking Varuni and dragging the Yamuna and killing Dvidvida. Meanwhile, back in Kasi. The king of Kasi is there with his friend named Pandraka. Pandraka had decided that he wanted to be God. Now, all of us in this material world want to be God, and some of us take it a little further than others.
Now, we do have some very funny-looking people walking around the planet today saying that they're the Supreme Lord. Some of them say they're Krishna. And I was asked to give a class at a home program in London where there were a lot of followers of some of these different people whose names don't need to be mentioned. And some of the people there asked me, how do you recognize a saintly person? And then some of them said, how do you recognize an incarnation? And I said, well, one thing is an incarnation is very beautiful. So, no more needed to be said. Later, I found out that some of those people decided that they wanted to worship the real Krishna. But anyway, even though most of us try to be God by trying to control everyone and everything, even though we can't even control when we get a cold, I can't control my own emotions, okay? And I'm trying to control your emotions. I can't control my destiny. I can't control how much money I have, but I want to control everyone around me. You know, I want to control my husband or my wife or my kids or my boss or whatever. But this Pondraka took it a little bit further, and he worshipped Lord Shiva, and he said, I really want to look just like God. So Jiva Goswami explains that Lord Shiva had given him this benediction that he could sort of kind of look like God. Just like we do a play, and sometimes one of the persons is Krishna, and we buy this blue paint, right? So it's kind of like that. All right, so this Pondraka thought, Balaram is away. This is my chance. Now, we found it was just the opposite with Pulumbasura. He wanted to get Krishna out of the way, thinking that then he could kill Balaram. So Pondraka thought, I want to get Balaram out of the way so I can dispense with Krishna. So Krishna's there in the Sudarma assembly hall. You know, every morning Krishna would leave all of his palaces, all 16,108. And as he walked out, each of the queens and everybody there, they'd say bye-bye, you know. And it was really hard. Actually, the queens were all like flirting with Krishna as he was leaving. And he found it really hard to get away from them. But they'd see him and, you know, Krishna. And as he entered the assembly hall, he just became one Krishna. So he enters the assembly hall and he's there. I mean, Ugrasen is the king. Krishna's the prince. Krishna doesn't like to be the king. He really doesn't. Once you get to Dwarka Mathura and Vrindavan, he likes to be the prince. And Ayodhya, he's the king. Vaikuntha, he's the king. But where he really gets to be where he likes to be the best, he doesn't like to be. He has other people be the king. Nanda is the king. Ugrasen is the king. Krishna's there as the prince. But still, you know, even though he's the prince, they all know. Especially Dwarka, they know. Vrindavan, they don't know. But in Dwarka, they know. So he's there as the leader in Dwarka. And all of his assembly is around him. Balaram's out of town, and a messenger comes in. I have come from Vasudev. Well, wait a minute, you know, this is Vasudev. Imagine if somebody comes in here and says, I'm the messenger from the real Urmila. So he said, I'm the messenger from the real Vasudev. And I have come to ask you three things. Give up your false claim to be Vasudev. I have the name. Like now we have trademark wars and stuff. He knows, he said, I've got the name. Give me your name, give me your weapons, and take shelter of me. Those were his three demands. So what did you guys all do when I said that? We laughed. Of course, you didn't laugh quite as loudly as the members of Krishna's assembly. They were, what do we call it, They were ruffling. They were rolling on the floor laughing. They were laughing and laughing and laughing. And Krishna really enjoyed that. Krishna really enjoyed that. So when you laugh at the foolish atheist, Krishna laughs with you. He really enjoys that when you laugh at such people. You know, there's no God. So they were laughing and laughing. And actually, the acharyas say that this Pondraka thought he was God, just like children make another child into the king. So this happens at Nityas and Mararis on a regular basis. And guess which one of their children is made into the king by the other children? Can anybody guess? No, it's not Johnny.
Chopra.
Nope. Devesha. Okay, they set up a chair. Devesha is only two, by the way, for those of you who don't know.
One.
It's not even two. It's one and a half. Okay, so they set up a big chair, one of their big chairs, and the kids put a cloth over it. And they set him down there on the throne, and then they put a table in front of it with a cloth, and they pile up all the toys, and they're fanning him, and they're singing praises, and this goes on for about an hour or so. And little Devesha just sits there. Where is Devesha? He's sleeping. Okay, so you'll get to meet the king later. So just like children play that way, and here's this one-year-old who thinks he's the king. So the Acharyas say, the same way Pandraka thought, I have actually become God. So then Krishna says to the messenger, I'm never going to give up my name or my weapons. He says, actually, on second thought, I might give up one of my weapons by cutting off his head. And he says, not only will I not take shelter of Pandraka, but you know who will take shelter? It's Pandraka will be the shelter of whom? Vultures and dogs. They will take shelter of him. So then the messenger, you know, takes this message back to his master, and Pandraka is patiently hearing this message, these insulting words from Krishna, and then he immediately gets on his armor. Meanwhile, as soon as Krishna delivered this message, he called for his charioteer named
Daruka.
Right? And he went out. It's not specified how many soldiers he took, but he definitely took some soldiers. Of course, Balaramji was not there. And he goes to the kingdom of Kashi, which Kashi, the people there mostly worship Shiva. Mostly worship Lord Shiva. Now, as he approaches, Pandraka comes out with two Akshohinis, and then behind him, his friend, the king of Kashi, comes out with three Akshohinis. And I don't remember, and I didn't look it up, exactly what's in an Akshohini. Any of you scholars remember? A lot. Yes. So there's elephant, certain number of elephants, certain number of horses, certain number of chariots, certain number of yes. It's a military division. Okay. So then finally when Pandraka comes out, Krishna sees him, it's stated, for the first time. And this is interesting, of course, because Krishna is seeing everything all the time. I mean, what's the question of Krishna seeing something for the first time? But of course, this is Naralila. This is Krishna's playing like an ordinary person because it's fun. You know, many times we think we'd like to be all-knowing, but it really isn't so much fun if you always know everything that's going to happen. So Krishna doesn't get in that mood. He's in this mood of, oh, what a surprise. Just like with Radharani, there's the Purvarag, where Radharani and Krishna meet for the first time. Now, how do they meet for the first time? Or Krishna marries Rukmini. You know, he's already always married. Of course, it's very nice, like with Ram and Sita. So at every moment, Ram and Sita are meeting for the first time, and she's garlanding him. At every moment, Ram and Sita are getting married. At every moment, they've always been married eternally. And at every moment, he's also searching for her. So all these are going on simultaneously at every moment. Anyway, so Krishna is seeing Pandraka for the first time. And imagine if there was somebody who was dressed up to look like you, trying to usurp your position. You know, what you would think of when you looked at them. So Krishna looks at this Pandraka, and he has on this very valuable crown, but it's just a cheap imitation of Krishna's. You ever seen those Indian costumes? You ever gotten any costumes and stuff from India? And they have this, you know, they're sort of from a real distance, maybe you could think it was gold, but, you know, it's really cheap stuff. And then he had these sort of two extra arms on. They weren't real arms, you know, with the four symbols. And then he had the yellow silk dhoti. He had a fake Kastuba jewel. He even had a fake Srivatsa gold painted on his chest. You know, he really, like, got it down. You know, when Gopakumar went to Vaikuntha Loka, as Sanatana Goswami explains in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when he's at the gate of Vaikuntha, he keeps seeing all these residents of Vaikuntha, and they have many different forms. Some of them look even like demigods, or some of them even look like demons. But many of them look like Vishnu. And when he sees them, he starts, you know, Om Namo Narayana. No, 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 they say, I'm just a servant. And, you know, they're not the real, they get really embarrassed and really upset. And then he sees another one even more opulent. And again, Om Namo Narayana. And again, it keeps happening about four or five times that Gopakumar offers obeisances to the servants of the Lord, thinking they're the Lord. And finally, one of them says, look, let me take you aside and tell you how to recognize God. This is, actually, we can see that Krishna is not envious. If you want to be like God, you can be like God. You can be like God. I mean, not only can you become a Lord Brahma, for whom the universe is basically your own body. This is explained also in the Bhagavatam, that when Lord Brahma had stolen the cows and the cowherd boys, is saying that this whole universe is just like 7 cubits for Lord Brahma. It's like his own body. So not only can you be the lord of a material universe, but you can be in the Vaikuntha Loka with a form like Vishnu, with practically all the powers of God. Krishna can empower you with his own powers. He is not envious. We're not like that. We don't want anyone to be as good as we are. We don't like that. My son was just lent me a book about a famous book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Finally got me to read it after like 10 years of pestering me. Well, he made a deal. He said, Mata, if you read this book, I'll read an equal number of pages in any Krishna conscious book you choose. So that was the end of that for me. I read the book. Anyway, it was a good book. But one of the points the author made, he said, wherever you are, everybody in the room thinks they're superior to you. Interesting, huh? Said, so if you treat people like that, they'll be more likely to be your friends because they already think that they're superior to you. Right, so generally in this world, we don't like thinking anyone's even our equal, what to speak of our superior. But Krishna is willing to have a whole world, an unlimited world, where practically all of the residents are able to have opulences, practically speaking, equal with him. He has no envy. Anyway, so one of them pulled aside Gopal Kumar and said, let me tell you how to recognize the real Lord. He has this Srivats, he has the Kostubha jewel, there's certain indications that only Krishna has. So this Pandraka, he was imitating even that in his own person. He had a long garland of forest flowers. He even had Makara earrings. Now, Makara is often translated as what? Shark or fish. Any other? Dolphin, crocodile. Actually, it's none of those. It's not any of those. Maybe some of you have seen there's silver bangles or gold bangles you get from India, and they're not exactly a circle where they come together. It kind of loops up this way. Have you ever seen those? It's a very common bangle where they loop up together. Those little creatures, those are makaras. And a makara, there's different shapes for them. Some people wonder if they're like dragons. Sometimes they have a crocodile body and an elephant head, but there isn't an English equivalent. And if you look it up somewhere, you'll read it's just some sort of mythological beast. It's a compilation, sort of like a griffin or something. It's a compilation of different animals. And the makara is the carrier of Cupid, also sometimes called the carrier of Ganga, although Ganga is often shown to ride on a crocodile, actually she rides on a makara. So Krishna has earrings like makaras or Cupid's carrier, and you find many times, especially in the literature of the Goswamis, reference to the makara as Cupid's carrier. Anyway, so this Pandraka also had these makara earrings, and he really made sure, you know, that he had Garuda on his flag. You know, he got every detail right. He had a good costume and set designer there. Okay. Oh, yes. I told you the Jiva Goswami said this was a benediction from Lord Shiva, and he got that from the Uttarakhanda of the Padma Purana, for all of you scholars out there. So that's where Pandraka got this benediction that he could have this getup. So what did Krishna do when he saw this Pandraka? He was laughing. So funny. You know, as if you're going to be God by just getting some makara earrings and painting a little gold swirl on your chest. Well, so then, all of the enemies of the Lord, all of the soldiers, they were attacking Krishna with, let's see, what were they attacking with? Tridents, clubs, bludgeons. What's a bludgeon? What's a bludgeon?
A club with a flat end.
A club with a flat end. All right, pikes. What's a pike?
A spear that's the full thing is made out of metal.
Oh, cool. Wow. No, that's great. And then there's a thing called Rishti's. I don't know what they are. Some kind of sword. It's a special kind of sword called a Rishti's sword. I have no idea what it looks like. Barbed darts. Barbed darts. What would a barbed dart look like? Maybe.
Well, they have pokes on it so that if it goes into you, it can't come out.
Oh, okay. That's really a problem. Because, like, if you...
Yeah. It could be a problem.
It could be a problem. Yeah, actually, where's Murari? Hey, Murari. Do you remember when you got that fish hook in your finger?
There it is.
Oh, there you are. Yeah, so there was this... How old were you?
13 or something.
13 or something. Okay, so there was this cat at the temple that had gotten a fish hook stuck in its mouth, right?
Right.
It must have been eating a fish that had a fish hook. And Murari, the kind, benevolent Vaishnava that he is, decided that he was going to free the fish hook from this cat.
Wow.
And he succeeded in that, and he got it. Which finger did you get in?
It was in my middle finger.
The middle finger of your right hand? So it went right through his finger. Now, if any of you have seen a fish hook, they have a barb on it. So there's one hook that goes one way and one hook that goes the other way. So once it gets in, you can't pull it out. And then we had to go to the doctor, and it was a fun experience. Yes. So they were attacking Krishna with barbed darts, with lances. What's a lance?
A long spear.
Okay. With swords? With axes?
Axes.
I don't think very many people fight wars with axes anymore. Parasaram, yeah. Could you imagine our fighters go to Iraq with axes? And with arrows. Okay, who can remember the weapons? I listed 10 different weapons. Who can name some weapons?
Bludgeon.
Barbed darts. Pike.
Lances.
Somebody else.
Maces.
Swords.
What?
Arrows.
Anybody else remember any?
Axes.
Swords. Barbed darts, yes. Tridents and the wristies. The wristies, okay. Then, Krishna pulled out all of his weapons, and it says he tormented all of the soldiers, just like the fire at the end of the universe torments all living entities. There's one place, I can't find exactly where it is again, sorry, I've looked and looked, but I know it's there, it's somewhere in the Bhagavatam, where Prabhupada says that what happens at the end of the creation is Krishna finally gets disgusted. I've been really trying to deliver all these living entities, and they just don't get it, you know. Just
fifth canon.
What?
It's in the fifth canon.
It's in the fifth, yeah. Pretty sure. I was looking under Glories of Lord Ananta, but I couldn't find it. I think that's where it is. I'll have to look again. So it's where, like Krishna says, you know, I'm just disgusted with all this. Just forget the whole thing. So that was the mood at this battle, where Krishna is tormenting all the living entities like it's the end of the universe. And the battlefield looked like a playground. It looked like a playground of whom? Not Krishna. Whose playground? What personality?
Parashuram.
Nope.
Sudarshan?
Nope.
Parashuram.
Nope.
Shiva?
Yep, Lord Shiva.
Oh.
It looked like Lord Shiva's playground. So you guys like playgrounds, right? What's in your playgrounds? Slides, swings, sandboxes, monkey bars. So what's in Lord Shiva's playground? Dead bodies. dead animals, dead soldiers, broken chariots, lots of things like blood and brains and intestines and everything like that, strewn hither and thither. And wise people, it says in the Bhagavatam, wise people were very happy to see this playground of Lord Shiva and all the body parts, all this, that the dismembered bodies. All the body parts and all the men and animals.
Why were they happy?
So why were the wise people to be happy to see this Lord Shiva's playground? Normally we think that wise people are not violent. Generally we say wise people do not like to see violence. So why were the wise people happy?
Because
they these were the people who were causing great trouble in human society. So compassion is sometimes meant that you stop somebody who's evil. There's this, I don't know if it's true, and I'm pretty sure, that Gandhi said, I'm so committed to nonviolence that if my daughter was violated in my presence, I would remain nonviolent toward the aggressor. And Prabhupada said, this is rubbish. You know, so there's a place for violence, and there is some happiness for violence. You know, somebody comes, I was in a shopping mall, I guess about a year ago, when they made an announcement over the speaker system that there was a gunman in a nearby mall shooting people. So, you know, if somebody comes into some public place and is shooting innocent people, nobody's upset if the gunman is killed by the police, are they?
No.
No one says, oh, the guy didn't get a trial. You know, we're very happy. If some terrorist, some, you know, random gunman, and the police get him, and the guy's body parts are all over, everybody rejoices. So the wise people are very happy when those who cause havoc in human society are killed. So then Krishna's coming face to face with Pandraka, and he says, all right, you wanted me to give up my weapons? Now I'll do that. Here you go. He says, you give up the false use of my name. And if I'm defeated, then certainly I will take your shelter. And then, of course, he released his... and it went... and that was the end of Pandraka. Now, the interesting thing about this is... Yam Krota Kama Sahaja Pranayani Bhiti Vatsalya Moha Guru Gaura Vasavi Bhava Sanchinta Testam Sadrisin Tanama Purete Govinda Madhipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. Pandraka was always thinking about Vishnu. You know, Krishna is really a nice guy. If you're totally absorbed in thoughts of him, even you're trying to kill him, he just takes the good. Now, we generally just take the bad. Somebody gives me a nice present and I say, you're not really giving that to me because you like me. You want something. Or you're just feeling obligated or something like that. I mean, somebody gives us everything and all we do is find fault with them. Isn't it? Right? Especially the people that are the nearest and dearest to us and do the most for us. Those are the people that we find the most fault with. We just, you know, any little thing. Oh, this is bad. Krishna's exactly the opposite. Pandraka didn't do anything for him. What did he do for him? Nothing.
He brought all those demons for him to kill.
All right. Gave us a nice story to read. So, but I mean, he wasn't doing any service for him at all other than remembering him. And he was remembering him just in anger. And he was remembering him as a competitor. He was remembering him out of envy. He was remembering him out of hatred, but he was remembering him. You know, most of us conditioned souls are angry at Krishna, but we're not remembering Krishna personally. We're thinking, oh, the real problem is my boss, or the real problem is my kid, or the real problem is my husband, or the real problem is my mother, or, you know, whatever it is. And we're directing what is actually our existential anger at Krishna towards some other living entity or some other circumstance. So here was someone who really was focusing. We're all here because we're angry at Krishna, by the way. We don't like the fact that he's in charge and we're not. And Pandraka was really directing it at Krishna. He was at Vishnu. He was really meditating on Vishnu to the point that he thought he was Vishnu. Now, of course, his thinking was offensive, but that offense was finished when Krishna killed him. So by Krishna killing him, his offense was finished and he became one of the associates of Vishnu. He got what he wanted. Eko bahunam yo vidadati kaman. You know what, folks? We get whatever we want. I know we don't like this because we look at our life and say, well, I didn't want this. But we did. We special ordered it. That just happened to me recently in California. I placed an order over the internet. I saw the thing online, you know, and I ordered it and I got it and I go, ugh. You know, at least they took it back. But Krishna doesn't usually take it back. You know, you pay your karma and you have your desires and you say, this is what I want, and you get it and go, what kind of a nasty God is this? And he says, sorry, this is what you wanted. So whatever we have, we special ordered it. The way we look, how much money we have, how much health we have, the people we're associating with. We did this, people. Which is good news because that means that we can craft our own future. And Krishna's also responding, yetamam prapajante. He is responding to people also spiritually. As you worship him, he responds. If you're always thinking about him, you get to be with him, even if that thinking about him is offensive. So that is his kindness. It's actually unbelievable kindness. How loving and giving Krishna is. That he really gives the living entities what they want. All right, so now remember that behind Pandraka, there were three Akshahinis of soldiers that were headed by the king of Kashi. And the king of Kashi was another very envious and demoniac person. And when he woke up out of bed that morning, now, usually what we say is if someone's giving you a hard time, We say, you know, this person probably didn't wake up this morning and said, you know, I really want to give Chandrika a hard time. Probably wasn't malicious. But in the case of the king of Kashi, that wasn't the case. He woke up that morning. I can't remember which of the commentators said this. Anyway, he woke up that morning and said, I am going to behead Krishna today. That's on my to-do list. To-do list. Number one, take off Krishna's head. Number two, throw it into the city so you can all see it. And his queens, I don't know how many he had, but more than one, and they were going around saying, my husband is going to behead Krishna today. And they were bragging to everybody about this. So Krishna didn't appreciate that very much. And he decided, again, he reciprocates. So he says, I think I'm going to take off his head and throw his head into the city. So he took off the head of the king of Kashi and threw that into Kashi. Now, a beheaded head doesn't necessarily immediately look like a head. Why? It doesn't have a body. It's all covered with blood. Right? And maybe it was kind of dirty from the battlefield. It gets really dusty on a battlefield, especially with all the horses and everything. So it was like a bunch of dirty blood was all over this head. And then it landed on the ground, so it was kind of probably not very attractive looking. And so people are wondering, what is this? Because, you know, with these walled cities, they would sometimes shoot catapults, you know, into the cities. So maybe they thought it was some kind of, maybe they had to call, like, the bomb squad first, you know, to see what this was. What's this strange object goes over the wall of the city, and they all go around. And Prabhupada said it was when they saw the earrings that they said, it's a head. Then they got really excited, because whose head did they figure it would be?
Krishna's.
That's what they were expecting. Right? That was the hype. Krishna's head's going to be in the city. Oh, it's Krishna's head! Then they start checking it out, and the queen said, no, it's our husband's head. And then they all start wailing. Right? So, at this point, one of Kashi Raja's sons, his name is Sudakshina. Sudakshina said, as often is said by materialistic people, when something bad happens, I'm going to get
revenge.
Now, this is, again, the general materialistic tendency, which at least I have. Probably none of you have it, but I have it, that if somebody does something that I don't like, my feeling is I want to give them at least an equal, if not greater, amount of pain. As fast as possible. Right? That's
I'm glad you're my friend.
That's the general mentality. It's funny because most of us conditioned souls don't think that we are like this. And one of the funny things that happens as you chant Hare Krishna is you start saying, I really am like this. You know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I like to see people unhappy. And you think, why is he talking like this? But if you notice this, I mean, just, you know, again, I'm sure it's not true for anybody here, but you might want to make a little experiment. And the next time that you're angry at someone, notice if you try to do things to hurt them. If you try to say things or act in such a way that you know is going to cause them some distress. And a lot of times when people do something that hurt us, I'm thinking that the way I'm going to get this person to stop hurting me is I'm going to make sure they know what it feels like. You know, I'm going to put them in some distress of some kind. So this is our general tendency. And therefore Jesus said, love your enemies. Do good to those who hurt you. Bless those who curse you. And this is a very, very difficult thing to do. And I certainly can't say that I do it consistently. But I will say that when I do it, I find a happiness that is pretty much indescribable. A happiness and a peace that's really something beyond material experience. That if you genuinely, from your heart, bless your enemies and bless those that try to hurt you and do good. Try to really do for others, not what they do to you, but what you would like them to do to you. Otherwise, guess what happens? It just keeps going on and on and on and on. Right? You know, they hurt you, you hurt them. They hurt you, you hurt them. And you keep coming back life after life, after life, after life, after life, after life, hurting each other. You know, everybody trying to up the ante a little bit. So the other view, it's quite interesting. Because why do we hurt others who hurt us? What are we trying to achieve for ourselves?
Justice.
Justice.
happiness because they won't hurt us again. Because they'll go, yes. Next time they'll go, right. Oh, wow, I didn't like that pain. Maybe I won't do it again.
Exactly. Yes, we're trying to find safety and happiness for ourselves. Exactly. The problem is that there's this law called karma, which of course applies to everybody but us. But this law of karma, the way it works is that what I get back, I've given out. What I'm getting back, I've given out. What I'm getting back, I've given out. Whatever I'm experiencing, I have done or am doing to somebody. And if you take that as a given, you'll find that it's true. So if people are hurting me, guess what? That's because I'm hurting others. If I don't want to be hurt, stop hurting others. It's a very interesting phenomenon. You may say, but people even attack the saintly persons. But guess what? They don't experience it as pain. Because they're not hurting anybody. Prahlad Maharaj did not experience his father's tortures as pain, nor did Haridas Thakur. We don't find what speak Maharaj Yudhisthira, Ajata Shatru. He didn't experience anyone as his enemy. It didn't touch him. Why? Because he wasn't putting it out. You know, pain is not just what happens to you, it's how you perceive it. And even physical pain. You can go into hypnosis and change your way of thinking and have an operation without anesthesia. Just by changing your perception of things. Things are not painful or pleasurable in and of their own right. It's our perception of them. If we're not hurting anybody, we will not perceive what happens to us as painful. We'll always be Brahmabhutta Prasannatma in all circumstances. This Krishna says, 6th chapter, Bhagavad Gita. He said, this indeed is actual freedom from all miseries caused by material contact. He doesn't say freedom from all miseries caused by material contact is you go around killing all your enemies and you have a nice life and, you know, there's all roses at your door. He says you put yourself in a different consciousness. So the materialistic persons, which includes me, the materialistic persons think the cause of my distress is such and such circumstance and often such and such person who's engineered such and such circumstance, so I'm going to get them. Now, from an objective point of view, we can see that Kashiraj was the aggressor here, not Krishna. Kashiraj was the aggressor. Why couldn't Krishna cut off his head? But Sudarshan has thought Krishna's my father's murderer, he thought. It was no murderer, it was a battlefield. So this is how a materialistic person reinterprets the facts in order to justify their own mentality. And what happens to Sudarshana is what happens to anyone who tries to cause harm to those that they feel, by their mental concoction, has harmed them. So he makes this determination, I'm going to kill my father's murderer. So he's in Kashi, so naturally in Kashi he prays to
Shiva.
So he prays to Shiva, and Shiva's very clever. Shiva's purpose is to destroy Sudarshana. That's his purpose. But what he says to Sudarshana is fine. You want to destroy Krishna, no problem. I will give you a ritual by which the fire itself will become a demon. Dakshin Agni. Agni means
fire.
So you will have the fire will become a demon, and I will send my associates, who are Lord Shiva's associates?
Ghosts.
And especially he sent the, who was it there? Pramatakos. He says, I'm going to send the Pramata ghost. He said, so you engage Brahmanas to do some black magic to invoke Dakshinagni. I'll send my Pramata ghost. And he says that this demon will kill anyone. Now, the way Prabhupada says this in Krishna book is anyone who's not a Brahmana. The specific Sanskrit word means anyone who is not inimical to the Brahmanas. They can't kill that person. If you like Brahmanas or you're Brahmana, it's not going to kill you. It will only kill you if you're an enemy of Brahmanas, if you're an enemy of saintly persons. Now, we all know, what's the prayer we all say? Namo Brahmanya Devaya Govamani Hitaya Cha Chagaditaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. That Krishna loves the Brahmanas. Everybody knows Krishna loves the Brahmanas. I mean, the Sudama Brahmana, he just gave Krishna a couple pieces of chipped rice, and Krishna gave him cheap, it was real cheap. Krishna gave him a palace, turned his wife into a demigoddess, you know. He likes the Brahmanas. So how did Sudarshana think this was going to work? Now this is really important. Because the Brahmanas would come every day to see Krishna. Now, many times Krishna would offer worship to the Brahmanas, like when Narada came, Krishna would see him and worship him. But many times the Brahmanas were also worshiping Krishna. There's Brahmanas here, and you worship Krishna, right? Does Krishna accept it? Yeah. But Krishna externally, from a material point of view, is a kshatriya. He's a king. What is a king doing accepting respect from a saintly person, from a priest, from a scholar? The kings are supposed to respect the priests and the scholars, not accept worship from them. And so therefore, Sudakshina thought that Krishna, he doesn't respect the Brahmanas at all. He's accepting service and honor from them. So he thinks he's better than the Brahmanas. So this is a little lesson that, just like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati talking about being guru, and saying that although guru is humble, still he has to receive the respect from his disciples. Now, just because someone's in a position where they're receiving respect from others, doesn't mean you can judge them. So this was Sudakshina's mistake. So then Sudakshina is worshipping this fire with the Brahmanas, and the fire takes the shape of a being. A being, a man, a huge man, huge naked man. And his whole body was like on fire. In fact, there were burning cinders coming out of his eyes. You know what a cinder is?
Coal.
Like, yeah, like spark. Coal. Big, big spark. Right, if you light a fire and big, big sparks come out. So those are actually coming out of his eyes. And he had a big beard and big hair. And what color was it?
Red.
Red. Really like bright orangey red. Kind of like the color of melted copper. Really, really, really bright orangey red. And then he had this big trident, and he was followed by these pramata ghosts. Now, pramata ghosts and hobgoblins are shape-changing demons. So they can assume all different forms. And there was this whole army. Oh, he also had big fangs. And his trident was on fire. And his legs were as tall as coconut palms. Pretty tall guy, right? And yes, he was walking with these big palm tree legs, right? He's made out of fire. So the whole earth was shaking. And everywhere he went, everything around him would just burst into flames. Right? If you have some really hot fire, then everything in the area, generally if things are dry, they'll burst into flames. I mean, here it'd be kind of hard for things to sort of burst into flames. But, you know, if this Dakshinagni were walking here, even here, everything was just bursting into flames. So now Dakshinagni, surrounded by the, what kind of hobgoblins were they?
Pramatagos.
He comes into Dwarka. Now this is also interesting because we often think, well, if I'm a devotee of Krishna, nothing bad should happen to me. My life should just be, you know, beautiful. I should never have any debt, I should never have any disease, my house shouldn't burn down, all my family members should love me all the time, and so forth. And here are the residents of Dwarka. Dwarka, they're in Dwarka. And Krishna's right there. And who comes into their city? Dakshinagni, surrounded by Pramathas. And what starts happening in Dwarka? There's fires. There starts to be fires in Dwarka. So the citizens get very upset. And they start running in to see Krishna. What's Krishna doing?
Playing chess.
He's playing chess. He's playing some games with his friends. And they run in, and Krishna's seeing that the devotees are upset. And even his own men. His own men means the other rulers, the other yadus. Even they were upset. So what are they upset for? I'm here. It's not going to be any problem. And he says, don't worry. We'll take care of this. Now, and Krishna didn't want to stop his game. You ever been playing a game where you don't want to stop? Who here has ever been playing a game and doesn't want to stop? Right? So just imagine if you were playing a game and your house was on fire, but you didn't want to stop. So that was the situation. Krishna's playing this game. Dwarka is getting to be on fire. And he's like, I want to play my game. So now Krishna has many, many, many servants. Who's Krishna's servants? Everybody. Everybody's Krishna's servants. Anyway, one of Krishna's servants is his own weapon, the Sudarshana. The Sudarshana is a person. And he's there standing by Krishna in his personified form. And Krishna says, go take care of this guy, please. Yeah, some of the demons Krishna deals with personally, and some of these, you know, I'd want to play my game. So Sudarshan, often the sun is compared to Sudarshan. In the eighth canto, Maharaj Ambarish addresses the sun as Sudarshan. And Sudarshan becomes as hot as 10 suns. He becomes as hot as the sun at the end of the cosmic manifestation. So we already saw on the battlefield, remember that Krishna was tormenting the soldiers of Pandraka and Kashi like the end of the creation. And Sudarshan is now doing the same thing. And also said that he was causing torment. Said he was causing torment to the land, the sea, the sky, but especially to Dakshin Agni and the Pramathas. So he's really just manifests this brilliance. And Dakshin Agni does what? Goes. Turns around, turns tail, and leaves. Said, this is too much for me. Right? Because Dakshin Agni, he's this black magic fire. He's a black magic fire person. He's basically a person made out of fire. But he's no match for the Sudarshan, who's the ultimate fire, the fire of complete dissolution. So Dakshin Agni takes his Pramitha ghost and runs. Now, the way that these guys are engineered, they're engineered for destruction. They have to destroy something. You know, you ever meet people like that? So this Dakshin Agni was like that. He had to destroy something. And so he went back to Kashi, and who did he destroy?
The city itself.
Not the city, actually. Sudakshina and his priests. Sudakshina and his priests. So you have to be careful who you help. All right, they were considered accomplices. Even though Sudakshina was then the king, still, the brahmanas, the priests, they have the responsibility that even though they're the servants of the king, they have the responsibility to say no if something's wrong. If you have a society where the priestly class is under the control of the king, is under the control of the politicians, and where the politicians can use the power of the religious people for their own purposes, that's a very dangerous society. The religious people have to be independent of the ruling class. They cannot be under the control of the ruling class. Otherwise, if the ruling class, whether they're kings or they're presidents or whatever their name is, whether they're elected or hereditary or however it is, if the religious people are under the control of the rulers of a country, then if the rulers of the country are demoniac, then the religious people will go down with them. So they were also destroyed. Then the Sudarshan went into Kashi. He followed Dakshin Agni. He wasn't just content to throw him out of Dwarka. He followed him all the way into Kashi, and the Sudarshan destroyed the city of Kashi. He destroyed the houses. He destroyed the granaries. Kashi was a very, very opulent city, and it was all destroyed. So we find this also, that when there's an evil ruler, often the entire city or the entire country suffers under the guidance of such a ruler. And then when the Sudarshan had done his business, then he returned back to Krishna, who's of course still playing his game. So this story ends with this verse. Ya enam shravayan martya uttama shloka vikraman. Where's Vikram? Vikram! Hey Vikram, you're in this verse. Samahito vashrunuyat sarva papai pramuchite. Ya means one who, enam this. Shravayet causes others to hear. Marchaha. Anyone know what mrityu means?
Death.
So marchaha is all of us.
Destined for death.
So when those who are destined to death hear, have others hear or hear. Uttama shloka.
About Krishna.
About Krishna. Uttama literally means above ignorance, or transcendental, wonderful. Sloka is prayers, one who's glorified with great prayers. Vikrama, what does Vikram mean, Vikram?
Big, means strong.
Strong means one who's very heroic. Here, Vikrama means this heroic story. Krishna really likes being a hero. It's one of the things he really enjoys. And don't we, when we do something heroic, when we do something wonderful, don't we want other people to know about it?
Yeah.
We sure do, right? Whenever we do something wonderful, some wonderful deed, we want to be able to tell other people, and we want them to say, wow. Even if it's a small thing,
right? Hey, how do you like the hooks I put up in the bathroom? Wow. You know, we want people to appreciate what we do, just like I came to visit. And what do my grandchildren immediately do? Grandma, let me show you my math problems. You know, let me show you my pictures that I've drawn. It's just, no, this is natural. I'm the same way. We're all like that. We're part of Krishna. Right? We're part of Krishna. It's just like when Krishna's in Vrindavana, I forget which pastime this is, when Krishna's in Vrindavana, at one point he's looking around at the forest, and he's thinking, wow, what nice energy I have. He is appreciating. Right? This is natural. I was visiting one gentleman a few weeks ago who was thinking might help with our curriculum project, and he was telling me how he doesn't use a layout program like InDesign. He uses, what does he call it? I forget what he calls it, some funny name. He said this is the basis for all the layout programs. So he wanted to show us how he did it. So he took us upstairs to his office. He showed us this book he had created. And then he said, let me show you my layout. And it was all code. It was all just, you know what code is? It was just a programming language. He showed us a screen full of programming language for us to admire. And I'm looking at him and thinking, how do I admire this? I was kind of lost. But I thought, this is the tendency, that we all want someone to admire our activities. We all want someone to admire, to appreciate, to say, well done, right? So Krishna likes this. You know, here I finished off that, threw the king of Kashi's head into the city, finished off that Pundrak, made a playground of Lord Shiva out of the army, right? Had just with my weapon, without my own effort, finished off this Dakshin Agni. And he wants people to say, wow, that's really cool. You're really something. I like you. I appreciate you. Right? So Uttama Sloka, one who's praised like that, his heroic pastimes, samahitaha. This word is very, very important. Samahita means with concentration, with attention. You ever have somebody talking about what exciting thing they did and you're not paying any attention? Because you don't really care? Right? They're telling you some story. Oh, well, you know, this happened and I almost got into trouble and then I said this thing and so they let me off and I did this thing and I did that thing. And you're just, you know, you're talking on the phone and maybe you're also answering your email, you're chatting with somebody, you're like, oh yeah, that's nice, yeah, oh wow, yeah, that sounds great, yeah, what did you do? So that's not the way Krishna wants us to hear these stories about him. Krishna wants us, he doesn't want us actually playing with pipe cleaners. See, you wouldn't like that. If you said, Grandma, Grandma, look at my pictures, and I was looking at your pictures while I'm playing with pipe cleaners, you wouldn't be very happy. You'd say, Grandma, you didn't look at it. Right? You're showing me the story you wrote, and if I just, one of them showed me a story, and I had already seen it, so I just kind of looked at it, and they said, but you didn't read it. I said, yes, I did. I read it before. So if we're hearing these stories, and all we're thinking about is, oh, when's the prasadam? I wonder, you know, I better check the Dow Jones Industrial, see how much money I've lost in the stock market in the last 48 hours. When's this program going to be over so I can get back to the fight I was having with my wife? You know, when can I get back to my video game? So that's not very pleasing to Krishna. Okay, this is not a religious ritual. I just had someone say that to me the other day, you know, you guys are really into rituals. I said, no, it's not a ritual. It's not like you just get together and, oh yeah, okay, we're going to hear a story about Krishna. Okay, folks, listen to the story. Yeah, okay. Did my duty. I'm a nice religious person. Pat myself on the head. Or I'm really spiritual, whatever, you know. No, with attention. Because what is the purpose of sadhana bhakti, Krishna says in the 12th chapter? He says the purpose of abhyas yoga, practice yoga, which we could talk about, what does that mean, practice yoga? The purpose of abhyas yoga or practice yoga is to develop
bhav.
Icha. Yes, bhav. Before you can develop bhav, You have to develop ichcha. You have to develop a desire. Yet that bhava, that emotion. If there's no feeling, if there's no desire, that's not yoga. That's not yoga. What kind of union you have with somebody with no desire? Hare Krishna. You can't do it. So we're here with rapt attention, so we get a desire, and we think, wow, Krishna's really interesting. So one who hears samahita, or shrunyat, or hears, so one who either speaks to others or hears, with samahita, sarva papai pramuchite, becomes released from all sins. And you might say, well, what kind of bandage is that? I want pure devotional service. Why isn't it saying prema bhakti? Why are you telling this story, Amila? You know, this is just released from all sins. What is a sin, my friend?
Separation from Krishna.
Now, the real situation, is prema already there? Yes. Prema is already there. What's between us and prema? Sin. Guess what happens when you get rid of all sins?
Prema.
Sin means what's separating me from Krishna. What is separating me from Krishna? My what?
False ego.
My false ego. Thinking that I'm the controller. My envy. My anger at Krishna. As I hear these wonderful things, samahitaha, with full attention, what that does is I start realizing Krishna's really nice. He's really, really nice. I think it's okay that he's God. I think that I'll be okay with that. I don't really think I want to try to be God anymore. I think I'd like to contribute to his pastimes. You know, I'd like to be one of those people in his assembly who laughs at Pandraka and gives him pleasure. I want to give Krishna pleasure. By the way, whenever we give Krishna pleasure, Krishna's pleasure potency is called Ladini Shakti. Ladini Shakti is Radharani. Whenever we say pleasing Krishna, immediately Ladini Shakti and one sort of her manifestation is involved. As soon as Krishna is pleased, must be Ladini Shakti is involved. So we hear these pastimes so we can want to contribute to that serving of the Lord's Ladini Shakti, to giving him pleasure. And therefore our envy, our anger, our fear, our hatred, our false ego, our lust, our greed, all we look at it and we say, yeah, I don't really want this. I want yoga. I want bhakti yoga. I want to join with Krishna in love and devotion. I want to see, wouldn't you like to see this pastime? Who would like to see this pastime? Yeah, I'd love to see this pastime.
I don't think so. I don't like the pastime.
Well, you're not, you know, we'll have to talk to you about that later. Gauri pastimes are also nice. All of Krishna's pastimes. So now I'd like to see Krishna defeat the demons too. Yes.
So when Sudarshan is manifesting in Dwarka to chase the demon away, everybody else is, what does everybody else do to get away from the pain of it?
I'm not sure about that. I was wondering about that myself.
It's gotta be pretty intense.
When he's chasing the Dakshinagni out of there. Yeah. I really don't know. I mean, I would just have to completely guess.
Yes, for me.
Yes.
You know, I don't know where I might have gotten it, but I always pictured the Shivatsa as being like white hairs. What's this golden spiral that you're talking about?
Sometimes it's described as white, sometimes golden. It's described different ways. We usually describe this as a mark, a line, or a swirl.
Isn't that where he got kicked?
Different spot? It's the form that the goddess of fortune has taken to be with him always. So it's basically the symbol of the goddess of fortune. She's always at his lotus feet, but he's also always embracing her as the Srivats. So that's a sign that she's always with him. Sometimes it's described as white and sometimes it's golden. Sometimes it's a streak and sometimes it's a swirl. It's described differently. Somebody else? All right, well, I hope that you enjoyed this story.
Yes,
I. Okay.
And we have this benediction that any mortal who recounts this heroic pastime of Lord Uttamasloka or who simply hears it attentively will become free from all sins. So thank you very much. All glories to Sri Krishna.